Hello neighbours, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Imke, your host. This is episode number 51. How do farmers decide what to grow or gather? One way is to look around you. What does nature do well? Follow it. Today we hear from two food producers in Newfoundland Labrador. Two more voices for the general movement to celebrate our natural resources and use what we have. It's a familiar goal, though our guests may have taken somewhat different paths to get there. Both are entrepreneurs who've used the bounty of our land and our sea for food production. Both see their work rooted in the values of rural communities, past and present, and they strive to support those communities. Today, we go from the Terra Nova region of the island to the south coast of Labrador, and no doubt many points in between. We'll talk about vegetables, soil, kelp, berries, marketing, co-ops, policy, and potential.
People have a storybook image of what life was like in Newfoundland, and they have this romantic remembrance of the eggs and the cows and the horses running free and the vegetables in the field.
You can be as rich anywhere in this province as you can be anywhere in Alberta.
Kelp is a very highly valued commodity on the world market all over the world, especially in clean environments like here in Newfoundland.
We start the show today in the Terra Nova region of Newfoundland. Head north of the TCH on the 310, wind along beside the southeast arm toward Eastport. You may need to stop here and there to take a photo or two. I did. We meet up with the farmer, entrepreneur, forester, and activist who set up Eastport Organics. He's in one of his greenhouses checking on crops. His trusty dog announces our arrival. Join us.
My name's Jason Bull. I'm in Eastport, Bonavista Bay, Newfoundland, and Labrador.
You sell at a number of markets. What do the customers ask? What do they want out of their food?
People do not are so disconnected.
Okay.
People have a storybook image of what life was like in Newfoundland because most of the people that live in the larger communities surrounding me, Clarenville and Gander, are first or second generation from the Bay. And they have this romantic remembrance of the eggs and the cows and the horses running free and the vegetables in the field. But nobody ever had science or the full spectrum picture to understand. They just did it out of necessity. But they did it well. It was 10,000 years of accumulated knowledge that was being used, perhaps, you know, or maybe 3,000 or what have you. But that all just got wiped off the map. Like when I moved to Eastport, no one in the community knew what a compost pile looked like. Because once I created one that was healthy, you could hear them old ladies from the old age home walking by. Now that's a healthy looking compost pile, right? And I was like, oh,
yeah.
I did something right. It was like year three. Because I'm a forester.
Yeah.
I'm a soils forestry silviculture forester. So that's where I come from, my background.
Yeah.
But the farming thing was something I saw but never understood, and then the organic part of it was something that my family understood or saw, but related to work rather than healthy living in the community, all the things that everybody ascribes to this type of lifestyle. But really, nobody wants to put the work in to do it. People like to go make a couple $1 million and go buy a romantic homestead and have some horses or something. No, not very many people want to do the work it takes to make this stuff efficient and build little systems.
So you say, like, people farm for centuries. They farm
thousands of years.
I'm talking about right here, and it worked out. What you're doing is you're trying to figure out why it's working out. You're using those same methods, but you're trying to figure out if that's what science is supposed to be about.
Sure.
You're trying to figure out why the nature works so well.
Yeah, ecology.
So when you set up this farm, you used your forestry knowledge?
Oh, I'm sure there was biology 101 and chemistry 101. But there was also political economics 501, because my background, I've come from forestry to activism, to community forestry activism around like in Indonesia and British Columbia. So I came from that into Eastport, and then discovered that I needed to have better food and way to create a living for myself, and just rebuilt the family homestead.
When did you start?
2007, probably, really earnestly. And then I built my family's land back up to a point where I could feed my family well, and future generations of our family will probably be fed very well, and I'm content with that. I'm not looking to corporatize it or monopolize the industry in any way. I'd like to protect some of the resources here municipally so everybody has access to it here once they realize that it is valuable, that it's there for them, so that our community can stay here and people want to come and make a desirable place to be in the future. I'd be happy with all that.
What do you grow?
Whatever I can.
What grows really well? What's something
Lots
that you...
Lots of things grow really well here.
Yeah, what's something that surprised... Like, people said you can't grow that here, and you are growing it.
Well, greenhouse tomatoes in the compost because of the rich compost. Because I have heating cables built into the beds here.
So when can you start planting in here?
All year.
Oh, so you're
as long
in
as the
all
roots
year.
Don't freeze for certain types of plants like kale, spinach, all the brassicas, really. Like, things like flowering plants mostly don't do well. Cucumbers, peppers, the tomatoes, they'll all die first frost. But anything that you're just growing for leafy greens generally does fairly well and can live at lower than zero temperatures. As long as the leaves are not too succulent, full of water at the time.
Okay.
So they'll stretch a little.
Yeah.
So instead of like ready to burst and then they freeze, but as long as you don't water too much.
So if the ambient temperature is way down, it doesn't matter because the roots are still...
That's generally what happens is that the roots cannot take water up anymore. That's why things die, generally, the whole plant, right? But the leaves will burst, you know, if the cells are too tight and flushed. And living in a condition like this, if we get frost tonight, 20% of this or 30% of this would die even with the heating cables on.
Where do you sell these?
Various places. I'm trying to build farmer's markets, get to farmer's markets for years. But labor is a big issue. Regular labor, I can do use woofing to do certain types of markets, but a regular farmer's market situation requires consistent labor.
If it was 2007 again, would you do things differently? Like,
well, I mean, now that I have more knowledge, of course there would be something different, but I would hopefully make the same decisions for the same reasons again.
What are the easiest things that could happen here to make food production more vibrant?
Science on what the inputs that we have available to make this healthy soils in different areas, and people can tell the difference. If you give them a fresh piece of lettuce from a compost that's here, and put the one next to them to the store, they don't need to be the king of England to understand the difference, because they don't need to be a connoisseur. It's so basic. It will take a while, a generation or two maybe. The unfortunate absence of flavor in most people's food, I think they would find an immediate difference in some garlic and some fresh greens under there. That rice, like I have some fresh eggs every day with some nice vinegars and different herbs mixed in. It takes them a little bit because their taste buds need to adjust.
What's a song that you hum to yourself when you're in the garden or whatever? Is there a piece of music that I should put underneath all of this?
It could be Chopin, it could be Italian resistance music, gypsy, it could be reggae, it could be rock and roll, heavy metal, jazz, anything could be playing. I like music made with love generally, as long as it's not full of hate and poorly put together chords. Like, I'm not a musician, I enjoy music. Una mattina mi sono svegliato, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Una mattina mi sono svegliato e ho trovato il vaso, oh partigiano.
Goran Bregovic and his Wedding and Funeral Orchestra with the song Bella Ciao by request of one of my guests today, Jason Bull. In our tour of his farm, Eastport Organics, we come to an interesting barrel with hoses coming in and out and some definite bubbling action. I'm curious, so I ask.
Tell me what we're looking at here.
This is kelp, different types of fish waste, and different, apples. I'm using apples instead of molasses, so it's a bacterial enhancer of sugar, you know?
So you got a series of buckets here. You got hoses going from one to the other. There's some nice bubbling.
Air bubbles to add some oxygen to keep the, healthy, right? Organisms, hopefully.
And in the end, what do you use this for?
Fertility, starting compost, getting the soils active in the spring, especially sandy soil here. Organic matter is really low, so I've got to keep things alive and going. We don't get a lot of snow cover, so we got a lot of winter kill in our soil, like a long way down. We don't have thick soil here. We're on a glacial outflow of a corner of a river.
Yeah.
And there's a mineral there underneath which keeps the water in the sand, but very little topsoil. The soil here in Eastport over the years has come from generally the beach down here that were the inputs that they had available. And that's the reason that Eastport was established, because the inputs were so close, because they weren't mass transporting, no supply chain of inputs. So all farming was local. It had to be. There's no animal agriculture here to gather nutrients on the landscape. Yeah. They didn't fence in animals in the... They kept horses in the barns, and that added some of the compostable material that they needed, and the acids and that, to actually break it down and make the minerals and nutrients available again. Yeah. But this is why Eastport was so successfully promoted as an agricultural area.
And when did that start?
In the early part of the 20th century. And I think that what we're doing with our agriculture is synonymous with what we did as colonizers. In Newfoundland, anyway, for what I do, I see predatory examples. Corporate, and they're not working with us.
We want to make sure that the farmers, people who are producing, use the best science that we have available.
I mean, you would hope.
You would hope, although we have the model of the fisheries in front of us sometimes, and you wonder if that's the case, if we've followed that. But that's a whole other program as well.
Well, that's intertwined.
It is tied together.
It's tied in with food production, because of the waste and the large-scale production we have.
Yep.
There's a lot of material available that's really full of good nutrients and minerals that are very clean and not toxic, and we could put into our food and decrease our health costs and, you know, increase our lifestyle choices that we could be making around, so people could be more active.
So if we know a bit more about the soil, the next piece is, how do we market this? How do we create the appetite for this?
Clean.
What do you mean by
iceberg
clean?
Iceberg fed. The cleanest water in the world is melting with all the minerals and nutrients and no toxic elements continuously loading into the bay, while all our streams are taking whatever's coming off the landscape out into the bay. As long as we don't pollute the bays, we should use those as resources to build our soils up. So we don't need to take just from what was in the bay, because there's deposits, depositional activity happening in the oceans. And
could you feed your lettuce with iceberg water and create iceberg lettuce?
Yeah, feed my chickens with my lobster shells. So the yolks come out tasting like lobster.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, they say, you know, if you feed pigs, what you want the pigs to taste like?
I feed a smoked mackerel. Yeah.
And do they taste like...
I would assume. Right? Salted smoke. Just shovel it in. But.
That's right. Pigs with high blood pressure.
But I mean, if you're eating a diet of smoked mackerel and you're a pig, you're probably pretty happy.
I wouldn't mind. What else you get out of the ocean? Do you take seaweed and stuff like that?
Oh,
and
seaweed? That's a can of worms.
Is it? How so?
Kelp is a very highly valued commodity on the world market, all over the world, especially in clean environments like here in Newfoundland. But kelp doesn't grow in cold water all that much. There's a good diversity in our oceans here because they're fairly clean, so they haven't been decimated by pollution. So you've got all the ecosystems still fairly intact. But, there's major corporate interest in kelp export and use of kelp in biomedical, feedstock, organic agriculture, because it's a primary resource. Probably the most primary resources in the world left.
Yeah.
It's not commodified next to water.
And you're saying it just doesn't grow fast enough to make
it
sustainable for us.
The way they do it in Bay of Fundy or in the Pacific Coast with threshers, more or less, that run across the top. So very valued, and people in Newfoundland are aware of its past traditional use, but not of the current exploitive uses that are being developed.
Right now, who regulates kelp? Is it fisheries and oceans?
There are no regulations.
There are no regulations. Limited. So it's not considered agriculture, it's not considered fisheries, it's not considered wildlife?
Oh, that's perfect for corporations, you see. Under the free trade deals, when you have international tribunals to settle trade disputes with governments, that we don't have regulations now to govern most of the resources that they're interested in. They took the regulations away and said, oh, it's deregulated. We're not going to give the native population access to knowledge about what's going on, like land resources, all these things in Newfoundland that have been held back from people here for hundreds of years. And now they're going to start selling to large corporations. And nobody knows that it's even legalized right now.
That's Bella Ciao by Goran Bregovic and Friends. In this last section of my interview with Jason Bull, we talk about the need for people to be connected to the environment, as well as his fears about the loss through export of raw materials, including kelp and seaweed, that could be used to enrich our soil and increase our yields.
My background in environmental activism led me to understand that people needed to be connected to the environment again. And when I started this, that's how I saw it, was trying to reconnect people to the environment they had around them so that they understood what they were doing to the environment and also what they could derive from it as a benefit rather than just a sea-doo to chase whales with.
So where do we start? Is it with the kids?
We have to enact laws to protect the key things we require for healthy, sustainable lifestyles and living. And then we have to teach the children and also teach the adults who have the children who are not behaving properly or don't understand these things and have some education for them. That's the nanny state or whatever, but I mean, we can't allow what we've seen over the last 50 years to escalate, in my opinion, if we want to live on the planet.
Are there some crops, animals, whatever that we should be working on
sheep,
that we aren't?
Sheep. For sure. Yeah, sheep are the most efficient animal for the area. We even have our own type of Newfoundland sheep. We get the Newfoundland pony. It loves it here. Newfoundland ponies are just bring it on.
Yeah.
They love it here. My little ponies live in the stalls here and they're like covered on three sides. That's all there is. There's tons of air in there. They would rather be outside. If I open the door in the wintertime, snowstorm, they would go stand beside the building rather than being there. Really. Yeah.
Is there still a bit of a residue of that relationship with the environment among many communities in Newfoundland and Labrador, which would be a benefit to growing our own food?
Most people in Newfoundland are conservationists.
Yes.
They live with the environment, but they understand you have to use it. And I don't know if they understand that you need to use it to protect it, which is my belief. I don't think you can exclude people from an unnatural environment and expect it to thrive. But people in Newfoundland live in the environment still, and they know all this. They know all that I'm doing. They did it all as children.
Yeah.
All the tools are still here. I'm still finding the tools in the woods as I clear the brush and stuff, making bigger fields. I'm finding tools that they threw away.
But do you think one of the reasons why growing our own food, it hasn't been as quick to catch on, is that people identify that with past where...
People in Newfoundland are still trying to catch up with the modern world, but that will be generational here.
So you win a lottery, you're allowed to make one policy change in agriculture in the province.
Zero export of organic material until food needs of Newfoundland are met.
No
zero
export.
Any waste that comes from primary resource extraction, zero export. Crab shells and no supply chain on the chemically laden industries of antibiotics that are very controversial, the fish farms and meat, all that stuff. Keep that out of the food system. And I would not allow any sale of product to those industries. Let them come up with their own solution. We should have the best possible food on the planet here. We could have the best possible food on the planet, clean environment. That's what it takes. Like, the soil is the best bank account you could have in the world.
Local food right now, one of the reasons why I hear people say that they don't buy more is that they can't afford it. It's priced slightly higher than elsewhere. So is it going to take a few years for that to change?
You need more competition. Why would I sell arugula for $5 a kilogram when I can get 40?
What's your favorite local meal?
Simple. Fresh cod, well bled and cooled, and fresh bed of arugula with the most expensive oil and vinegar with the herbs I have for about 3 days in the fridge in that mixture, you know, and then just the cod for about 12 minutes, depending on the thickness, and a freshly cut arugula from after a cold night. Plop the cod on the arugula and then pour the oil all around it.
Yeah.
You got to have the herb essence, you know, mixed in.
We've talked a lot about fish and land resources here. This show is really focused more on the terrestrial resource. So when we think of the food system, we really need to think of the whole system, including the marine, obviously.
In Newfoundland, with the industrial fishing that we do, it's an obvious link because that's ultra clean.
Yes.
You know? That's not even close to the coast where we're getting that stuff from. So the North Atlantic is probably the least polluted ocean.
But it tends to be export-oriented. Like, it's hard to get fish unless you know a guy.
It is. And supposedly they changed that a couple of years ago or last year, and that's come up with a quota system for restaurants, really, and that's just unlimited even more. Because it's driving the price up.
Someone from outside might say, okay, you folks in Newfoundland Labrador, you've got a unique moment. You've got the same department, which is aquaculture, fisheries, and agriculture together.
That's not a coincidence about how it all links to what we talked about earlier and the corporatization of these.
So you're afraid that what happened in those other industries is
going
to happen?
I'm not afraid. I know it's happening. I've talked to researchers and people who've been writing studies. Because in Newfoundland, I could call the premier tomorrow, but I could also call every other person along the chain before I reach the premier.
Yeah.
So I can call everybody in Newfoundland. It takes a couple of days and you can talk to anybody you like. So if you know who to talk to, and especially in politics where you have political appointees and all these boards and all these other things, and you're part of those groups of people and you can call them and get their frank observations, then you can see everything. You can see the lobbying, the meetings, everything hidden and the political agendas, all that stuff. It's so easy, you know, if you're a political animal and not afraid to ask some questions and ruffle some feathers. Yeah. It's not very hard to see here.
Jason, thanks so much.
Thanks for coming by.
My next guest is a former berry processor who we met briefly in an earlier show. Stallman Flynn is the entrepreneur behind the Pure Labrador brand. Raised in Labrador, he's an entrepreneur, a business owner, oh, and an occasional politician. I start by asking him about other uses for berries.
There's some other things that we can do with berries that we aren't now.
I think it's worth exploring. Up until this year, I supplied Newfoundland chocolate with the jams that they used in their candy. So let's get into some of the hard candy as an example. I've been in high-end hotels across the country with the one-ounce bottle of jam. There's opportunities. I'm no doctor, so I'm not going to speak about the nutraceutical side of it. But partridge berries, heard a lot of talk about the antioxidants, for example, in blueberries. My research shows that partridge berries are far more superior to blueberries. I'll give you an example. Yeah. I've been working with partridge berries as a drink, $200,000 study, and we mixed it with partridge berry ice, and I did the taste testing, the recipe development, you know, the whole thing. It's a fantastic product and good opportunity to export. But someone with a, you know, science background, you know, what's the nutraceutical value? Yeah. What's the medical value, so on with all of this. And that's where I was lacking in that area. Interesting enough, the research station here in Pinsbrook a few years ago did some studies, and the further north you go, the pick partridge berries, as an example, the more nutraceutical value they have. So something picked in Cartwright, Labrador, would have more antioxidants than in Fordo, than in Pinsbrook. So we, as a country, as a province, are way behind what Scandinavian countries did.
Yes, the example of innovation in Nordic countries with a similar boreal landscape and environment as us is a common topic. Here on this show and elsewhere, you may have noticed, I ask him about ideas on how to attract new residents to rural communities and how to keep the ones we have.
It all comes down to lifestyle. What lifestyle do you want? If we're going into Fordo, we can't expect to have the same level of services that you would have in downtown Toronto. But on the other hand, I can walk into a home in Fordo at $100,000, whereas in Toronto, that same home may cost me $1 million. So I kind of smile when I hear people saying, oh, I got to move away from here. It's never pleasant, and that's you know, their choice at the end of the day. But there's so much opportunity. I mean, I would rather be putting it in my own pocket than in the bank's pocket, to be quite frank with you. And I think Richard Fuchs, the Eagle River Credit Union in Southern Labrador, was a very successful credit union. And it still is. And I wonder why the success of it. So when they started looking at it, they realized it had one of the lowest income per capita than anywhere in the province and possibly in Canada. But when they actually went and done the work and find out why the success of the credit union, they realized that they're catching their fish, it's costing them a bit of gas to get out to bay. They built their own boat, they built their own house, and at the end of it, they discovered while it had one of the lowest incomes per capita, it was probably the richest per capita than anywhere in the province. So I think if we applied our skills, and depending what you want at the end of the day, you know, we can be as rich anywhere in this province as you can be anywhere in Alberta.
That's the incomparable Tony Rice unit with the old tune Blackberry Blossom. I'm speaking with Stallman Flynn, the processor behind Pure Labrador. In this last section, we talk about the value of collaboration and cooperatives.
If we take some of those products and went as a cooperative, because the dollars that you spend spinning your wheels at some of these trade shows, if we could take one person, one cooperative, take our product and go to these shows, we've been money ahead, and we've really got to get into the position of education and bringing the entrepreneurs that's out there together to take our products to the world marketplace, because we can't do it alone. It's an impossible task. I mean, if you've got a mom and pop operation down the street that can produce 10,000 bottles a month, as an argument's sake, well, guess what? We don't belong in the Chinese marketplace. Yeah. And how would you get there to begin with? But I really think that we've got to study and the product that we have and how do we get it to the marketplace. And in the meantime, we build upon the success of that cooperative.
Yeah. Ocean Spray, which is a big cranberry company, began as a co-op. It's arguments mm-hmm. about whether it's still one. But that model of co-op seems to be not as popular, at least on the island of Newfoundland, as I would think it could be.
Well, the closest one that I can come to would be the Labrador Fisherman Junior Shrimp Company. Yeah. That was started really out of desperation for employment on the coast. And they've done a remarkable job with the processing of the fish and employment along the straits and in southern Labrador in general. But, you know, that all started with a government decision to have a cooperative and give them some of the resources needed to make that co-op financially viable. And it has really sustained, particularly from Lanseclair to Cartwright, it has sustained these communities for the past 30, 40 years.
Yeah. And it seems like the co-ops that have started, they obviously have the bottom line in terms of economics, yeah. but they're also more invested in the community.
That's right, and they have a reason to go back. I mean, if I was doing that as a private entrepreneur, well, you know, there's nothing says that I've got to reinvest in the community, although it's good business practice, don't get me wrong, but there's nothing says that I have to.
That idea of co-op has been floated for vegetables as well, that maybe we need a vegetable desk, a berry desk, or something like that, so that we can brand.
I really think it's a strategy that we've got to study. I don't have all the answers, and I never will. If I did, I wouldn't be behind this desk this morning, but I'm prepared to take a look at it. I remember when we were shipping to England with the States with our products, I approached government and said, you buy the caps for me with Tourism NL on the cover of your website, we'll ship them in. I just need you to print the caps for me. I'm not charging anything. This is a bottle that's going to be sitting on someone's table for 2 weeks to a month, right? And I remember distinctly, you know, coming back and understand why. Oh my, if I do that, you know, they're going to have, you know, 50 other people coming to me to do the same thing. I can't accept that argument that we can't do that.
That might be a good thing if there were 50 other...
Well, I mean, you do one as a test run, and I mean, they put up four ads on TV and, you know, call Stellman, call Ivan, they know which one is working for them.
Well, thanks so much for taking your time.
Thanks. Thanks. Pleasure.
That was Stellman Flynn of Pure Labrador. Just a note about the comments that our first guest, Jason Bull, mentioned around policy regarding seaweed harvesting in our province. I was in touch recently. He noted that the East Coast Environmental Law Organization had commissioned a legal memorandum on the regulation of seaweed harvesting in multiple jurisdictions, which included Newfoundland and Labrador. And indeed, we do lack provincial legislation or regulations on seaweed harvesting.
You give them the fresh piece of lettuce from the compost that's here and put the one next to them to the store. They don't need to be the King of England to understand the difference, because they don't need to be a connoisseur.
That all started with a government decision to have a cooperative and give them some of the resources needed to make that co-op financially viable.
We can't allow what we've seen over the last 50 years to escalate, in my opinion, if we want to live on the planet.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The songs for today's show were Bella Ciao by Goran Bregovic and Blackberry Blossom by the Tony Rice Unit. The theme music, Cluckold Hen, was performed this week by Nashville player Paul Birch. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
Most people in Newfoundland are conservationists. Yeah. They live with the environment, but they understand you have to use it.